Welcome to the Critical Few Actions to Improve Your Business podcast. I'm John Downes and I'm here to help you cut through the overwhelm and prioritize what matters most to improve your business. Let's get started and discover the critical few actions that have the biggest impact. Today, I'd like to introduce you to Ben Verney, who I met when we first joined Deloitte over 30 years ago. Ben specializes in helping healthy businesses restructure to innovate and take advantage of new opportunities. And he also helps distressed businesses that are in financial crisis to navigate their way forward, possibly by better financial management, possibly by voluntary administration, and in the more dire cases, receivership and insolvency. So if you're a CEO or a founder with doubts about the financial viability of your organization and wondering what those next steps might look like, then Ben's the guy to listen to now rather than burying your head in the sand. Ben, welcome.
Thanks, John. I appreciate the invite to your podcast.
You're most welcome. So Ben, before we get into all things business restructuring and rescue, tell me about your journey and how you got interested in it.
John, let me start backwards. You know, I started Grey House Partners in 2016, so we're coming up to our 10th anniversary now, and its purpose is to focus on restructuring businesses of all sizes, whether they be in distress or non-distress.
Yeah.
And we've now grown to the size of having staff in 4 states, and recently we're very happy with our achievement to restructure 3 manufacturing companies in 3 states via the voluntary administration deed of company arrangement process, saving approximately 200 jobs. So we're very proud of that achievement. Moving backwards as to why we set up Grey House Partners to restructure or help businesses restructure. And there's been a lot of water under the bridge, John, since we first met all those years ago. My career has spanned over 20 years prior to that. And I was in a number of different places, but almost 50-50 between working in the corporate world and as a corporate advisor in professional services as an insolvency practitioner and restructuring practitioner. My time in the corporate world, I was able to work with some leaders that were at the top of their game, and they instilled in me the requirement in a non-distressed environment to not be complacent, to always strive to innovate and lead change and to optimize the businesses that you're in. So I've been able to apply that knowledge and experience from a non-distressed environment into distressed turnarounds and restructuring, which has been very valuable. And John, if you don't mind, if I can just reach out to my father, I could go back to the very early days when he would take me into our family textile business on a weekend when I was about 8 years old. And would go into the premises, and I would be given a broom to sweep the floors on a weekend. And whilst he was talking to the staff and aligning the product in between or in front of every machine ready for the Monday production run.
Mm.
And then as I got older and I was able to actually work in the business as a teenager, I finished up working on all 180 machines, and I knew all 180 employees. And I had a fairly good handle on how things operate in the business and what would happen if the machine broke down and what sort of impact that would have on your production flow. And then when I was turned 18 and I was at the university, I was able to drive the delivery trucks to customers and suppliers. So by the time I graduated as a commerce graduate from uni, I felt that I had a fairly good handle on the entire supply chain that went throughout inside a manufacturing business, but also external to a manufacturing business. And I think that's probably where I've always wanted to be able to advise businesses on performance improvement, sort of that experience I had at such an early age.
Yeah. Well, what a fantastic foundation that was for you. And grit and hard work has been a crucial part of your character for all of the time that I've known you. Ben, in the context of medium businesses, what is a business restructuring?
Look, simply, business restructuring is any change that drives to increase your profits, whether that be a revenue growth or decrease in expenses through efficiencies, and also a change of your balance sheet to strengthen your balance sheet in terms of greater assets and then liabilities, with a primary focus on increasing your cash flow and your cash forecasts.
And working with medium business, that's one of the things I love about it, is that when you're talking about a restructuring, it's got to focus on a positive financial outcome, whereas some larger organisations, government organisations, other organisations, when they talk about a restructuring, it almost sounds like an annual shifting of the deck chairs, and it's questionable as to what they might achieve. But maybe that's just John Dowd's opinion. And I guess this is the sort of thing that we'd hope to see as best practice in leading businesses. Eyes out on the horizon, looking to improve customer service, anticipating new customer needs and opportunities in the market. But then there's the other hand, where businesses are in distress. And this is the area that few people really talk about or even want to talk about. But I think it's essential for founders and CEOs to know about, so that they can recognize the early warning signs, take good preventative action and advice, and if that's not successful, understand what their options and obligations are and how they unfold and what the downstream implications for them are professionally and personally. So can you walk me through a sort of a progression with your with one of your recent clients?
Yeah, look, John, every restructure that I see is different in some shape or form. So it's very difficult to give a global response. I think if it's a distress and small to medium-sized business that is distress, it's normally a cash flow issue. So understanding what caused that cash flow issue is the foundation of any restructure or possible restructure. And we do see the results on one-off events, such as a COVID. Now, that's a few years ago now, but COVID was a one-off expense that the business weren't able to cope with. We also see adverse findings in litigation that create a debt that the business was not prepared for and can't easily get around. I'll give one example. We managed to restructure via a voluntary administration and get a debt company arrangement. This business, prior to COVID, had a turnover of about $30 million, and during COVID, it was required to continue working, and it got no government benefits because it was deemed to be a service that needed to continue. It provided product into hospitals and things like that, so it needed to continue operating. But a third of its business was lost because of the shutdown, and this is a Victorian business, so then the shutdown of one of the other customers. However, with no assistance, this business was unable to downsize its staff and its operating costs. It's the same levels. Its revenue dropped. So rolling forward a couple of years, this business had essentially been using the tax office as another bank, yeah, and had accumulated unpaid tax bills of $1.8 million until recently.
And that was pretty common as a result of the COVID environment, wasn't it?
Unfortunately, yes, it was. Yeah, for a number of reasons, but yes, we did see a lot of that and still are seeing the effects of that as well. But this business got an external advisor in, so the previous tax advisor had not been alerting acquired to correctly, I'll say correctly.
Process was coming.
This director, we got a new advisor in who saw the need and started thinking about ways of restructuring the business. Unfortunately, restructuring does come at a cost. It requires time, and it also does require capital to initiate some of these initiatives, such as right-sizing your staff. This is the redundancy cost that you need to be able to pay. Now, this business had a payment plan with the tax office, and it was a huge payment plan. It was like $10,000 to $20,000 a week. And this business just wasn't generating that free cash to be able to do so. So it got to the stage where it was never going to work. This business was facing the decision to liquidate and close or to do a formal restructure, only because doing a non-formal restructure just didn't have the capital to be able to pay the restructuring. So I was asked to come in and help with that process. Then I was appointed branch administrator. So just to go back, the balance sheet was in poor position. It had a $1.8, call it a $2 million debt to the tax office, plus $400,000 of other creditors. Then it wasn't able to pay on time. And the idea was to go through a voluntary administration and to eliminate those debts, either entirely or to a great portion. But we looked at it and said, well, there's no point doing that if the business can't sustain paying its debts as and when they fall due and moving forward. That's not helpful to anyone, particularly if you go to the creditors to ask them to compromise their debts. They're going to be wanting some sort of a surety that the business will survive in the future. That's the purpose of the voluntary administration and duty company arrangement. So part of that process was to look at what other initiatives could we put in during the voluntary administration period to help the business turn around and restructure whilst also restructuring its balance sheet through the DD process. And we had a look at it. We were able to reduce the workforce by 20%, so down from about 70 down to about 55. We also looked at an SKU rationalization. Now, we were able to reduce the SKUs from about 150 to 120, so remove the old SKUs that were just unprofitable or inefficient to manufacture anymore, and obviously compromise the debts. We also increased prices. So we went to all the customers and said, we're going to increase your prices prior to the annual review, and also went to suppliers and asked them, whilst we're going to compromise their debts, also asked for discounts for a period of time. And we also received some landlord assistance during this period. So we were able to get all of that done in the voluntary administration period. Now, the voluntary administration only goes for 25 business days, so 5 weeks.
Wow.
Which is extraordinary. And I think this is the advantage of the voluntary administration and deed to company arrangement process in Australian economy. It allows businesses that would have failed to turn itself around in such a short timeline. And when you look at it, you're asking creditors to vote for some sort of a surety. They're going to write off money. They won't have an ongoing business. So you need to do something very quickly. You can't allow it to go any longer. And they want to know that the business will survive. So I do a report and report on what it would look like in a liquidation, if they're going to get any money, compare it to what the proposal looks like in the deed proposal, and also do an assessment of the livelihood of the business moving forward to be able to continue paying its debts at them when they fall due. So in that period of time, 5 weeks, we initiated all of those initiatives, and we were able to reduce costs by $500,000 in terms of the staff costs and other associated costs, and increase revenue by $500,000 by putting price increases of up to 5%. So in that short period, we were able to turn around the operating performance from, call it break even, to producing potentially $1 million profit on an annual basis, which again turned around the business from being a liquidation sale that would have no value to a business generating $1 million per year at a multiple or 2-3, whatever. This business in 1 to 2 months now had a value, it grown in value by about $2 to $3 million.
Fantastic.
I mean, it's extraordinary.
So, you know, 50 jobs saved as opposed to 75 jobs lost, with potentially their provisions and their entitlements. Taxpayers effectively would have written off nearly $2 million, and the creditors would have no chance of having, you know, a future customer.
That's the point, John, is yes, in a liquidation, all the creditors will have received 0 cents in allowing or voting or approving all the debtor company arrangement proposals to go ahead. They were writing off significant portions of their debt, but they had an ongoing customer. And that's one of the hardest things to do if you're a supplier to a company, losing your debt or having your debt written off, but also losing the customer is equally as hard, because it's quite hard to go and find another customer to fill that void. So, and I think that's the commercial benefits of the deed of company arrangements, that you do retain manufacturing, you retain employment, and you retain supply chains in the economy. And I think that's the real advantage of having of the voluntary administration process.
And with that, what happened with the creditors? So you had the tax office in there, you had to pay out redundancies and their entitlements for 20 staff or so, and then you've got a raft of secured and unsecured creditors. How does there's two parts to the question, B, who gets priority in the thing, and does that matter when you're doing a DOCA?
I think it does matter. And yes, you did warn me, you did say that we weren't going to go through the Corporations Act.
No, we're not going to go through the Corporations Act. And this is not legal advice. And take your own individualized advice and get somebody specialist who can actually answer for it. But I always thought the tax office wins in all circumstances. But I don't know if that's correct.
No. Look, there is a priority. And in this case, there were minimal secured creditors. So there wasn't a general security provider. There were lessors involved. And the deal was that the business ongoing continue maintaining or servicing those leases. So that satisfied with secured creditors. And the employees, as you say, the employees that were made redundant were paid their full entitlements.
Yeah.
And the employees that continued, they had their entitlements which stay with the company and they will be paid as and when they fall due. And all of their superannuation was, if it wasn't up to date, was ensured to be up to date and paid. So all the employees got a better outcome than they would have in a liquidation. Because in a liquidation, whilst there's this thing called the Fair Entitlements Guarantee Scheme, or FEG, that pays employees redundancies and wages, it doesn't pay their superannuation. So that was the significant advantage of this proposal. And it's the creditors, all creditors being suppliers and the tax officers lost their debt but had ongoing debt. And the tax officers is an advantage because in the future they would continue getting paid their BAS and pay-as-you-go on time, but also it avoided having to pay the costs of redundancies to those other 55 employees if that had been made and done a few liquidations. So there were significant advantages in recommending, on my behalf as a voluntary administrator, recommending the DOCA that we propose, but also for the creditors in voting for it, because ultimately it is the creditors that vote all the voluntary administrator, so all the deed of company arrangement proposal to go ahead.
And yeah, so many questions that sort of flow from this. One of them that comes up is you've brought in to go through the voluntary administration process, and you know at the end of that process, you're going to present to the creditors what the future could look like or what the future will look like if they don't accept. That must be a fairly interesting meeting because some of those creditors could actually see the writing on the wall for themselves anyway. How do you handle that, and what does it look like?
Yeah, again, every case is different. But generally, when we are asking creditors to vote for a proposal, if I'm going to recommend a proposal, then I know that there's going to be significant write-offs. It's a delicate position to go. And I don't like dealing with surprises myself, so I don't like creditors dealing with surprises. I would normally, or my staff would normally talk to most of the creditors to gauge a sense of how they behave if they were presented with a debt company arrangement. And that also covers employees as well. So there's a number of stakeholders. If they're secured creditors, and there's a financier, they're very important. Employees are very important, as are the suppliers. And I think I'll get to answer your question in a minute. But the whole idea is I need to understand and determine that there's an appetite for this business to survive. So if there's a reluctance from the employees who continue supporting, well, then that's a bit of a red flag.
Yeah.
Again, your financiers, if they've had enough, it's a red flag. And your suppliers, if your suppliers are no longer wanting to supply to that business because they think there's a risk of ever getting pwned, you know, if any one of those don't work, you know that there's a real risk that the business won't continue operating in the future. So part of my assessment is, and my report to creditors is to determine that appetite and what the business looks like moving forward. So we'll talk to the tax office. The tax office in this case was the single largest creditor and an important creditor. And potentially it could have asked for a poll and voted against the resolution. And I won't go into the details of conversation with the tax office in this part, but they were a little bit concerned about the size of the debt, the fact that the tax office hadn't already issued any DPNs to this company. But at the same time, they recognised that there was a significant workforce at play here that were all going to vote for the DOCA, and that the entire supply base was going to vote for the DOCA. So that was a significant impact for the tax office, knowing that potentially every other creditor was going to vote for it.
So they were pretty reasonable in that regard.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it was a big egg to suck on, but it certainly, you know, they were pretty reasonable in that regard.
Yeah. And so, like I said, I don't ever hold a creditors meeting without having spoken to the people who's going to impact the most beforehand. But yeah, you're right. Some of these meetings can be quite challenging, particularly if you're not prepared, for sure.
And so any of those creditors could have actually declined to support the program. And what would be the effect of that?
If 50% in number had voted against, then the outcome would be to go into a liquidation.
Go into liquidation.
And that would have been, it's a hypothetical, but eventually it closed down. There may have been a short period of operating that business and trying to get a going concern sale. But we're dealing with perishable items here, so that would have been a very, very short period. Otherwise, it wouldn't have just been shut down and closed as a fire sale.
Yeah. Yeah. And do you think that, if the leadership and the directors had been on top of the game, do you think that they might have been able to avoid a VA, or if they'd acted earlier? Or do you think it was almost inevitable as a result of the COVID experience or any other crisis?
Yeah, it's crystal ball stuff, John. I think this debt had accumulated for 3 whole years. And so definitely at the very start of that, if they had have initiated some changes and scaled down in terms of the workforce primarily, and then started talking to suppliers about some pricing assistance, that could have been possible early on. But because you do need, as I said early on, you do need capital to be able to restructure. If you're going to downsize staff, you need to have the capital to pay the redundancies. And if you don't, then there is a real problem and you start digging the hole deeper. That's the most disappointing thing that you do see, that sometimes the hole is so deep you just can't get out, or the director can't get themselves out of. So without having to go into a voluntary administration and potentially a deed of company arrangement.
Mm. Mm. Are you looking to pinpoint the areas that will make the biggest impact on your business? Check out the Organisation Performance and Value Diagnostic. This powerful tool lets you evaluate your business on multiple facets and provides email reminders to keep you on track. Head over to criticalfewactions.com.au and get started now. All right, so Ben, so we've had a great example where you've not surprised the creditors. You've gone into the final meeting and they've, more than 50% of them have voted for the deed of arrangement, and the roses come out in the garden. What happens if it actually all goes to shit?
Good question, John. And
eloquent
sometimes that does happen, unfortunately. And I think the answer to that is that there are a number of potential solutions to any problem. If during the VA process and the report to creditors that the creditors have voted upon targets a number of initiatives, such as reducing the debt in the balance sheet and potentially some elements of restructuring to assist the cash flow, if they don't work and the business goes to shit, as you say, what else weren't they opening their eyes to? What other options do they have to quickly restructure the business? Now, that does happen. And I can use as an example a business that I was consulting for that wasn't a formal restructuring. It was an informal restructure. A business that was part of a listed entity that had just been IPO'd. It was a business, small goods business, that was really non-core to the rest of the business. But it had been underperforming financially, whilst its operating metrics were okay. Stifop was reasonable, its make to plan was reasonable, but it was underperforming and had adverse labor variances. All information was based on this one machinery that a recent acquisition cost $20 million wasn't working. So the target was, this was the reason why this business was adversely affected and not operating anywhere near it the way it could have. So we were targeted to have a look and say, is this the machine the cause of it, and should we divest this asset? We went in and had a look, and we found that the machinery was a slicing machine of small goods and then an automated packaging machine at the end of it. It was supposed to operate with one or two staff. The small goods that were going through the machine were slipping, and so they had to put 6 staff on the production line to restack the small goods before it got packed. And they were slowing down the process to change and deal with that. When I went there to have a look at it, and we had the manufacturing there as well, they said, well, why are you slicing these small goods frozen when it was designed to slice the small goods at ambient temperature? And the reason being was the staff had, when they put this new machine in, they were stockpiling all the small goods before that process, because it was a perishable product. They were freezing goods for up to a week before it went through this machine, which was an additional process. Then it ran through this new machine and it will be delivered. So your diaphragm was always quadruple. But it had added this freezing cost, and it also meant the machine wasn't working properly. So we said, let's try not freezing. Let's just go as the machine was designed to, slice it in small ribs, ambient temperature, and see if that worked. It worked. So it meant that straight away, we could remove the extra 6 to 8 staff that were working on the machine. It removed the holding cost of the freezer room mid-production cycle. And that solved that particular problem. But when we did a further deep dive, we found that the staff were stopping that machine to produce all of its SKUs. And as an example, they were slicing bacon. They were packaging 2 slices, they're packaging 4 slices, 6 slices, 8 slices, 12 slices, and then 1 kilo, 2 kilo lots. And they would stop the machine to change the packaging for every time they needed to change the SKU. And that actually meant the machine was never going to be running at the right rate that it was designed to. So we went and did an SKU rationalization program, and we said, how about we just take out all those extra SKUs and just produce and sell 6 slice bacon packs and 12 slice bacon packs. And we'll re-educate the customers that that's what they can buy. We're not going to cater for the people that only wanted 2 bits of bacon. So that process took a period of 6 months to rationalize the SKU. And that was just one example. But we took out about 30 to 40% of the SKUs that just weren't economical for the production cycle. And we turned that business around from being negative cash flow to producing $2 million each year. So I think it's a long way of getting back to answer your questions that what happens when it all goes to shit? Maybe there are more answers than one to restructure a company and to improve your performance. So have an open mind, be flexible, cast a wide net. And when you are trying to restructure a business through a voluntary administration, because you have one chance that gives you the flexibility to tackle a number of options concurrently, and hopefully more than one stick.
Excellent. Yeah, I've seen that before. And of course, you know, emotions are running fairly high at this point, even if they're not being sort of shared. And the simple reality is that any business owner or founder is looking at a child that is being declared quite ugly. And, you know, the things that they don't want to do is they don't want to make any of their staff redundant because they're like extended members of the family as well.
Yeah.
Apart from some of the narcissists as business leaders that I don't often deal with. And so there is a natural hesitance to defer, maybe reach for a slightly larger shovel. And with one of my clients, one of the businesses I came into touch with, they didn't reach for a larger shovel. They actually got themselves a bulldozer and made it the hole much, much bigger. And so that VA process was a very short process, which ended up in a total loss for everybody involved. But I can certainly understand, and you and I have witnessed, the emotional machinations that founders and business owners go over when they're trying to figure out, is there anything else that they could be doing which would extend the lifeline of the business or not? And the reality is sometimes these things need to be taken out of their hands so that a VA can actually get somebody independent who's objective and can look at it from the perspective of having seen many, many of these situations and help turn it around.
Yeah, look, all good points, John. And I think, look, what you've just said, I see a lot, like where you have a single director, owner-operator, or a couple of directors, and it's a very delicate position to be in when you have to fire people that you love. And I think the first suggestion I would have would be to talk to someone. And it doesn't have, it can be a friend, it can be someone, a trusted employee even, or a friend outside, but start talking to other people and share the load or share your concerns to other people. Most people these days have been touched by a liquidation or an insolvent event. So a lot of people have knowledge about it. And I think that if you're a director operating a business, then you've got a particular issue that you're struggling with, don't try and just do it all alone. So talk to a friend, either inside or external to your employment or your business. Reach out to people you know, trusted advisors such as your accountant or solicitor, or someone like you, John, or myself, to understand what your options are. Because more hens dealing with the same problem, you've got a greater chance of dealing and getting a solution rather than being very emotional about the whole thing yourself. And I said all the time, there's a lot of stress in businesses, and small businesses, post-COVID, and unfortunately, you still see it today.
Mm, yeah, and I think that talking, it is actually such a crucial activity because, you know, it's only, I think every business owner has had that experience of the 3 o'clock in the morning staring at the ceiling thinking about meeting payroll. But the simple reality is thinking to themselves is a circular activity and it generally achieves nothing apart from loss of sleep. But it is founded in neuroscience. So when you start to talk about an issue, you're actually activating the problem-solving center of the brain and it actually gets you out of that circular process and is such a healthy way to address the issue. When we're thinking about, you know, businesses, as you were saying before, you know, the key metrics that every business owner should be looking at, clearly one of them obviously is the cash flow.
Yes.
What else do you see as the canaries in the coal mine, the early warning signs that they really need to be looking at?
Well, cash flow is king. That is the key thing. And there's no one thing to be looking at. Understanding your cash flow, understanding your balance sheet, looking at your debts, are they growing? Is your liability side of the balance sheet growing greater than your asset, your debt side of the balance sheet? And again, that is, it all links back to cash flow. And on the profit side, again, if you're making losses or years, then that has to have an impact on your cash flow as well. So what can you do to change that? Can you get a new customer? Can you produce a new product into the market that you haven't done before that's not going to cost an arm and a leg to send issue to the market? Can you seek cost-cutting initiatives anywhere in your business? Now, you know, staff is an issue because that does come at a cost, but you can ask your landlord for some rent relief. You can talk to your suppliers for a temporary discount just to provide you with that space. You can go to your financier and ask for some interest relief as well. So there's a whole lot of options available to you if you put yourself out there and you don't necessarily need to do that yourself, because these initiatives can be a complete distraction to the operation of your business.
Totally.
And this is where advisors like you and me, John, are helpful, because you want your CEO or your owner-operator doing what they do best, and that's running the business.
Yeah.
As opposed to being distracted on fixing it. So, again, that does come at a cost, but you put that into the equation. You can outsource that stuff to people that do it for a living, whilst you focus on the business. So that's something to think about. Now, look, John, getting back to your initial question, cash flow is king, and that's where it starts and finishes, essentially.
I guess the other thing that's running around this process, you know, before they speak to other people and before they potentially get really good advice, is fear. And it's not just about fear of loss of the business or fear of disappointing the employees or fear of disappointing their family and their loved ones and so on. There's also the fear that they don't understand what are the implications for them personally, professionally, as shareholders and so on. Most business owners and founders that I've worked with over the last 20 years, very few of them, probably not even 10% of them, will have gone through the education process that you and I went through. None of them actually went through business law. None of them went through tax accounting, let alone financial accounting, management accounting. All things that I wish to forget. And so, you know, I think there's sort of a lot of fear of, well, what else is going to come crashing down on me? Do you have some thoughts on the sort of the general principles around, so how liable the shareholders, directors, CEOs, and so on, if this does go pear-shaped?
Yeah, and there's a bit to that too, John. I'll throw into the mix to fear pride.
Yes.
A lot of directors are very proud people because it's their baby. They've never been started or been quite some time. And they're very proud of that achievement. And so failure is a disgrace to them. And so that's something that also holds them back. And I do say to all directors that I talk to is to throw that out the door, because most people have been task going themselves in events, and since COVID, it's been widespread. So just deal with yourself, your own health, and let's get this operating again. And most people will see you for what you've done. It's quite gutsy for you to take this initiative, a restructuring initiative, to pay people back if possible. So I say that to directors. But also, again, you've touched on a bit of corporate law in here, John, that you just said that you weren't going to do.
Well, directors, I'm not asking for legal advice. I'm just trying to understand, you know, if I'm worried about not asking for advice because I think that will make me more obligated, then that's a bad situation. But yeah.
Yeah, look, I think in any restructure or contemplation of a restructure or a forced restructuring, directors need to be aware of their duties, their director duties. And it's really important to know that directors are potentially liable for debts that they incur in the business if they're insolvent, if they're trading whilst insolvent. Mm. And you are essentially insolvent if you are not solvent. And solvency means that you can pay your debts as and when they fall due. Now, if you're in a position where you can't, such as this case, then you are potentially liable for paying all of those debts that you incurred whilst your business incurred them and was not able to pay them back. So it's a really delicate position you're in. And that's why we say to all directors, they should be aware, make themselves aware of those provisions if they're not already aware of them, but also send their own external advice so that they know what the potential liabilities that they're exposing themselves to.
And of course, once they bring in an administrator, to a degree, they are following their director's duties anyway, because they're recognising that, you know, they may be insolvent. They don't want to be trading insolvent. So let's bring in an administrator so they can do it too.
But well, that is true. That is a protection mechanism for a period of time. Yeah. And particularly if the voluntary administration process leads to a restructure by a deed of company arrangement and the business continues, then the directors are no longer liable for any debts that they incurred whilst insolvent prior to the appointment of voluntary administration. If, however, the creditors don't vote for a deed of company arrangement, or if a deed of company arrangement is not proposed, then the only outcome after the voluntary administration is for the company to go into liquidation, and then those liabilities to continue to exist.
So it can be quite a cleansing process for them.
The beauty of it, which I started saying early on, is a voluntary administration process is 25 business days. So it's a very, very quick process.
That's really quick.
It's really quick. And you are allowed 15 business days after that to produce the deed. So the creditors will vote for a deed proposal. You've got 15 business days afterwards to prepare that and have it executed. So it's 5 to 8 business weeks. Really, you can have your business back. It's clean and it's been restructured and you're ready to move forward. I don't know of anything that's as good as that for the SME businesses, particularly if you've got debts over $1 million. There is a new thing in Australia. It's called a small business restructure that is more suited for smaller businesses that have less than $1 million in debt, which is a short form voluntary administration, so to speak. But those mechanisms are wonderful for businesses that have had instances where they've got a one-off debt they just cannot get themselves out of very quickly. Yeah. And if I contrast that mechanism, so in a distressed environment, you've got a formal appointment from voluntary administrator, you can turn your business around in, I'll say now, 8 weeks, five to eight weeks, versus restructuring a solvent business or a non-distressed business where you are constantly at the top of your game and you're addressing innovation and business optimization. That process takes a lot longer because you have your corporate governance processes that dictate the length of time change can be implemented into your business. Things like there'll be a business case that needs to be produced for the acquisition or divestment of an asset. And then there'll be various decision gates you go through up to various authorized delegations that may take 6 months, 12 months before you can actually implement a change or a restructuring of some sort. So, which is ironic, isn't it? Really, there is an advantage of restructuring through a formal process in a distressed business over a non-distressed business just because of the corporate governance.
Yeah, urgency takes over, as does the formal structure of the process.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
Which is a big advantage. So with that, how likely is this to occur? Are you seeing much of this at the moment? I mean, are there specific industries or types of businesses or phases of business life cycle where this is most common?
We are seeing a lot of it now, yes, that's for sure. And you're talking about distress, you're talking about voluntary administrations and restructuring. Mm. Yeah, we are seeing a lot of it. And the standard industries now, construction, at retail and manufacturing, they've been the top three that have been around for the last 5 years or so and have been adversely impacted.
And partly that's the overhang from COVID, but also partly because the economy's challenged at the moment?
Yeah, that's right. A combination of all of that, John.
So I guess we're going through a bit of a restructuring boom at the moment. It's got to be somebody, right?
That's true. You're always seeing restructuring. Companies will always go come insolvent and either be liquidated or there's waves of restructuring them to survive. And that is a sign of a healthy economy. You do need to allow resources to be divested and go elsewhere. And that's personal resources as well as assets to go. There's no point having a stagnating business anywhere. That's not good for anyone. That's not good for the health and economy. So you're always going to see it. And that was one thing with COVID is with all the government incentives that came out. You didn't see the natural fallover and redivestment of resources. I think that was a big thing that you suffered in the last couple of years.
Yeah, and tax office was not collecting at that stage.
Yeah.
Certainly not aggressively anyway.
Correct. And now almost overly aggressive. So we're always going to see businesses fold for whatever reason or need to be restructured. And as I said, you have the high-performing businesses that will always survive, but they are also constantly looking for some restructuring of some sort. Because no one wants a complacent CEO or complacent management team. That is not what anyone wants. As a shareholder, you don't want a complacent management team. You want to drive performance and increase dividends.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, as we were saying before, the person who needs to really drive this when we're in crisis is what, the CEO or the CFO? So,
well, both. And sometimes in a small to medium-sized business, that's the one person.
Yes.
That is. And throw in shareholder as well as that one person. So it depends on the size of the business. But you could go down to general managers of a division of a large organization that need to be aware of these things. And certainly the finance team would be the first to see impacts on cash flow. The CEO, general manager, again, depending on the size of the business, must be well across that rather than just looking in the helicopter view as to how the business is being directed. You do need to have a handle on your cash flow. And as I said earlier, that's the king. Cash flow is the king. If you've got a positive cash flow, then you're doing something right.
Yeah, absolutely. And so in the context of continuously reinventing a business or restructuring the business, Ben, you know, you're a medium business. How do you apply this in your business?
Are you talking about my business, Greyhouse Partners?
Greyhouse.
We're always looking at improving our service and in the way we deliver it, and we're constantly addressing our training for our staff. In most businesses, staff are the key resource, and whether you be manufacturing or a service provider, as Greyhouse is, so we need to invest in our staff. I think that's the key thing. AI is the big thing that everyone's talking about now, John, and I have to put my hand up and say that we're a little bit behind on that. I know that you're a leader in AI, but I think we need to be aware of it, and if we can use it, then great. If it's for us, then you certainly, that could be a podcast for yourself on yourself, John, is how you use AI in your business.
It's extensive.
But look, I think every business must invest in yourself. So keep yourself the highest level. As soon as you start stagnating, then think all other businesses will surpass you. Invest in your staff. They are key. And when I say invest in your staff, allow the staff to grow, to replace you. I think they need them to see that is possible. So invest in their training. You will be repaid in buckets, that's for sure.
For sure.
In manufacturing, but make sure their environment is safe, clean and safe. That is a key investment, being more resources.
Yeah.
And just on a side, you can walk into any business and you can tell whether they are well operated because they will have clean floors.
Yeah, exactly. It is the telltale. People are wearing their high vis as opposed to them all being in rando.
Yeah, true.
Excellent.
If you really want to kick off your strategic planning and work in a supportive environment with other CEOs and leaders, the CEO Masterclass in Strategic Planning and Implementation is for you. This 10-month small group course helps you craft your strategic plan, present it to a group of peer investors, and develop a habit of monthly implementation. Our waitlist is open now at criticalfewactions.com.au.
So, Ben, final question. If a founder or a CEO is feeling more than a little doubtful about the state of their business performance, what critical few actions should they start tomorrow if they did nothing else?
Okay. Our first thing is talk to someone. We said this earlier, talk to someone. It can be a friend, family friend, someone that you, a trusted employee, advisor, accountant, solicitor, you or me, John. Just talk to someone and share the load, but also understand your options.
Yeah.
When you are struggling with pride and fear and all those things as being the owner and director. But also I'll throw in there to understand your director duties. So you do need to have someone in that group of people you talk to help you understand what your director duties are. That may help you make the most appropriate decision. The second thing would be to understand if there is an appetite for change. Do you personally, that person that's running a small to medium-sized business, do you have the appetite to restructure yourself? Do you have the energy to move forward? Are your staff supportive of such a restructure? Your suppliers, your creditors, your bank, and also your customers as well. I mean, are your customers prepared to support you? Because again, your customer may say, well, you're struggling. How about we give you more orders, 10% more orders? Great. So I think you need to understand that. Is there an appetite for more those stakeholders for you to restructure? Thirdly, I'll then throw in your cash flow. Do you have an understanding of your cash flow? What caused the issues to date? What your current cash flow is? And if you do restructure, do some of these initiatives that we spoke about today, such as downsizing, or new product, entering new products, cutting costs. What does that look like in the future? Is it positive that's going to allow you to continue paying your debts as and when they fall due and be returned to being a good corporate citizen? You know, I think that's important. And again, have appropriate investment in your resources. So train your staff and make sure that their operations are safe for them. So they're probably the four critical few actions that I'd be saying to any small to medium owner operator to look at for tomorrow. That was the question. What are you going to do tomorrow? They're the four things I'll be doing tomorrow.
Yeah, I absolutely and wholeheartedly agree. Ben, it's been a delight and an education to talk to you as always. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, John. Appreciate your time.
Pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the Critical Few Actions podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and grab the downloadables from the show notes. And if you found this episode helpful, I'd really appreciate it if you share it with your peers and your team. Stay focused and take action. The Critical Few Actions podcast, including show notes and links, provides general information only and is not individualized business advice, nor can it be relied upon as such. You must take responsibility for your own advice, decisions, and actions.